Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Juliet Adams. Juliet is an old friend of mine, and I love her work dearly. And I really wanted to host this session, and I'm really happy that it worked out. So Juliet is the director of A Hat for Work. She has long experience in leadership and workplace productivity. She's a driving force for mindfulness in the workplace. She's also the author of a few best-selling books on workplace mindfulness and the science of intention. And she's also known as the intention coach. And today's session is about what is intention and why does it matter? Juliet, I'm absolutely delighted to have you. Thank you for being here. Hello.
Thank you. If you can give me my screen back, I would be very delighted.
You need to start your screen share.
There we go. There we go. Is that nice and visible now?
It is perfect.
Perfect. So, good morning. I'm really, really delighted to be able to take part in this amazing event and to share my work and research with you. And I'd like to start with a little story. So imagine the scene. There's extensive flooding and everyone has evacuated their house, except for one man who's doggedly stayed with his house. But unfortunately, the flood waters have come up and come up, and now he's sitting marooned on the roof of his house. And this man has faith. So he's praying to God and he says, you know, oh, my Lord, please save me, you know, save me from the floods. And 10 minutes later, a rowing boat comes along and the man says, hey, jump in the boat, you know, I'll save you. And the man said, well, thank you very much, but it's OK, my God's going to save me. So the flood water continues to rise. It's starting to get to the upstairs window by now. And a motorboat comes down and the man says, hey, let me save you. You know, I've got this boat, I've got plenty of space, jump in, it'll be fine. And the man said, thank you very kindly, but it's fine, God's going to save me. So very reluctantly, off goes the motorboat. And by now, it's getting pretty cold, and he's been sitting on this roof for many hours, he's starting to shiver, and the water has actually gone above the upstairs window, and it's now starting to creep up the roof. And all of a sudden, from the heavens above, comes a helicopter, and the helicopter pilot throws him down a rope and says, hey, let me save you, grab this rope, I'll pull you to safety. And the man said, you know, God's going to save me, everything's going to be fine. And the man said, no, you know, the water is rising really fast, you need to leave the house now. No, I'm staying with the house, my God's going to save me. So unfortunately, the man drowns, and he arrives in heaven and requests an audience with his God. And he says to his God, you know, what on earth happened? I had faith. I prayed to you. I asked you to save me. And God takes a deep breath and looks at him and says, very calmly, I sent you two boats. I sent you a helicopter. What else do you expect me to do? So this is an old joke, but maybe some of you have already heard it. But what I'd like you to really think about carefully for one moment is, what was the intention of the man sitting on the roof? Was his intention to live? Was his intention to be saved, or to be saved by God? When we set an intention, it's really important to be clear about what you want and then hold it lightly. You know, many unexpected things can emerge, such as a boat or a helicopter, and they can help you to achieve your intention. But if you hold things too rigidly, you aren't open to the possibilities that may arise when you set that intention. Intentions really matter. And as we've seen, they can make the difference between life and death. Conscious and unconscious intentions underpin your every action. And in my talk today, it's my intention to really get you thinking about the role that intentions are already playing in your life and can play in the future. Are your intentions helping you to create the life you really want? And if not, why not? And before I launch into background research and theories that underpin my work, I'd like you to meet a couple of friends of mine, Hank and Helen. Once the screen refreshes, we always get a little bit of a delay at the start. There we go. So this is Hank and Helen, and they're featured on Intention Matters as case studies. And I've picked them because they're very, very different people. Helen and Hank are actually real people that I know, but I've changed their names and pictures and a few details just for confidentiality. They're very, very different people, but intention has changed both of their life. Helen is a really hardworking, driven, highly motivated senior manager working for a FTSE 100 global insurance specialist. And like many of my corporate clients that I coach, she struggled initially to identify her intentions. And in fact, she was confusing goals and intentions. So I'll talk later about the difference between the two. Hank, on the other hand, is, shall we say, a slightly singular individual. He's got a wealth of practical skills. He's great at problem solving. And he was really, really clear about his intention right from the outset. He wanted to live off grid, away from people, and to be as self-sufficient as possible so that he only had to work as little as possible, spending the remainder of his time just subsisting. Two different people, one powerful process. And I'm going to be using Hank and Helen's case studies throughout the presentation today just to illustrate the different ways in which the same intention journey can manifest. So today we're going to be covering in three chunks, foundations and underpinning theory. So starting off with my journey, how I got to be writing a book on intention, definitions of intention and underpinning research. Then we go into a chunk on models, frameworks and rationale. So intention forms, mind-brain connection, the I am model. So just as our sponsor said, you know, the mind, actually every single thing is controlled by the mind. So if we know a little bit more about the mind, we can start to get it working for us in the background there. And then the last section is on application and practicality. So the difference between goals and intentions, the think, feel, know model, the idea framework, and future applications for the world of work, with a little bit of time for Q&A at the end. So I'm going to stop after each section and just check if there's any questions. So please do chat away or ask questions in the question box. Daniella, do you want the questions in the question box or the chat box? Because I see that there are both.
I would prefer them to have them in the question box, or if you would like to take live questions, people can also raise their hand and we can give them audio and you can listen to the question. So in the chat, the likelihood that the questions get lost is simply too big. So use the Q&A box. It helps us to not get lost.
Okay, so probably I'll just to keep the flow going, we'll probably do it at the section breaks, but if I try to take them at the section breaks, then you won't have to wait right to the end of the presentation, because I know how it can feel when you've got a burning question and you're sitting there for 30 or 40 minutes trying to get it answered. So I am going to stop periodically for questions. So I'm going to start off in the foundations and underpinning theory section, and I'd like to talk a little bit about my intention journey. So my formal background, corporate learning and development, specialist in leadership development, my master's is in training design. And about 12, probably more years ago, I got involved in mindfulness. I started to think about how mindfulness could really help leaders. But at that point, it wasn't well known. There weren't many books on the subject. And what was there was dull, dry and academic, or should we say hippie spiritual new agey. And so I went on a little bit of a quest to bring mindfulness into the mainstream from a business perspective. And that started with developing an approach to teaching in the workplace, education raising via conferences. I wrote a number of books on the subject. I then ended up out there teaching it in the workplace. And then one of the pictures there will be probably fairly dear to Daniella. It's a picture taken in the Netherlands where we were doing a training program for workplace mindfulness training. So we've now trained about 270 people all over the world to teach mindfulness in the workplace context. And also increasingly, as well as writing books, I've been asked to talk around the world about both intention and workplace mindfulness. So the picture at the bottom, which is slightly embarrassing, was actually taken in China in November, my last travel before coronavirus. So it wasn't me bringing it back to Britain. I guarantee it wasn't me. So that's been a little bit about my journey, but I'm very grounded. I'm very practical. It's not, you know, my whole approach is, instead of just blindly trusting, I like to understand the research basis, and then I like to try to make the complex simple. So that's how I ended up writing a book on intention. In fact, intention matters, shameless plug there. When you look at mindfulness, intention, attention, attitude are the three elements of mindfulness, but the intention part is often very overlooked in training. And I started to think, well, hold on, this intention bit, actually, it underpins pretty much everything that we do, but yet all of the books out there are slightly woolly and depend on, dare I say it, blind faith. And I was more interested in what's the evidence and how can I find a practical way to bring this to people who might otherwise be a little bit skeptical. So moving on, we have a little poll and it's on what is intention. And I'm wondering if Daniella can run that poll. Do I have, there we go, perfect. If you'd like to just pick one that you think best describes intention. So don't be shy. There we go. We've got people coming in. It's coming in now thick and fast. So we've got probably nearly half of you now. We'll just allow a little bit longer for people to have the opportunity. Okay. And if you can close the poll in about 10 seconds, Daniella, that would be really great. Thank you.
All right, the poll is closed. Do you want me to read it or?
No, I can see, if you can leave it on the screen just for a moment and then take it off for me, that would be fantastic. Thank you. So top choice, but only by a very thin margin, is an aim that guides an action and holding attention on the desired outcome, with holding attention requiring will, which is a persistent, focused desire. So it was a slightly trick question. I'm really glad that nobody voted for the goal and objective, because I did say at the beginning, it's different from a goal. So thank you. You are obviously listening. All of these are definitions of intention that I found when I was trawling dictionaries, academic papers, and the internet. It's really confusing out there what the definition. There is no one universal definition of intention. It's all really, really confusing. So definitely it's an aim that guides an action. It's definitely a determination to act in a certain way. It's definitely holding attention. And it's definitely something that you want and plan to do. So if we can remove the poll, please, Daniela. Or shall I? Maybe I can. There we go. Perfect. How's that? So I came up with a working definition for the purpose of the book Intention Matters, just to keep things simple. And this is what I came up with. Intention is a deep, sincere desire coupled with a belief that it's possible. So if I can just unpick that a little bit, a deep, sincere desire, or DSD, as I call it. So in other words, it's something that you really want. In fact, in my original manuscript for the book, I said, really, really want. My copy reader read it and said, you can't say that. You sound like the Spice Girls. But the point is, it's something that you want at a deep level. It's not a superficial want. It's something that is really important to you. And it's coupled with a belief that it's possible. So we don't need to know how it's going to happen. But we do need to have a belief. We need to feel that, yep, in some way, I don't know how, it's going to happen. And it's actually the belief bit that's often missing from the definitions, but it's so important. And with working with it for the last couple of years, I've come to see just how important the belief part is. I was working with a corporate client working for one of the big five firms of accountants, and they'd sent her on a mindset course, and the mindset course identified negative and unhelpful mindsets, and then tried to get them to set affirmations that were the polar opposite of what their inner negative mindset was saying. And the point was, they were told to repeat this, and if they repeated it enough, it would come into being. But actually what happened was, it got them so far and then it got stuck. And it was because the belief part was missing. And when I worked with this individual, we just scaled it back slightly, checked in, the embodiment's really important, checked in with the body. Does this feel right? No? Okay. Let's scale it in a tiny bit. Does this feel right? No, but it's feeling more right. Scale it in a fraction more. Aha. Yeah, we've got the deep, sincere desire. We've got the belief. And working on that. And the point is, if you've got limiting beliefs, you can start at where you're at. And then as things start to happen, you can always expand as your belief grows. So a deep, sincere desire underpinned or coupled with a belief that it's possible. So I wanted to talk a little bit about research. Now, for some of you, this will be super exciting, and for others, it'll be yawn. But I think it's important to know that this has an evidence base rather than it's just, you know, let's just do this and blindly follow it. So I'm going to try to keep this relatively short, but I want to list the papers because then you can always go and have a good look at them. So my work is based on many years of research on the subject, and I do want to draw your attention to just a few papers in these areas. Many of you are going to be familiar with the work of Lieber, who witnessed EEG readings that demonstrated that a decision had been made by the brain seconds before the person was actually aware that they'd made a decision. So Lieber had initially concluded that this demonstrated that free will couldn't possibly exist. It was just an illusion. And if free will is an illusion, then intention setting is, of course, a complete waste of time. So building on Bratman's work, Mele's work in 2009 then concluded that, in quotes, there was powerful evidence that we do make conscious decisions and set intentions to act. Lieber himself has now come round to Mele's way of thinking. And now he believes that his experiments leave some room for free will, or as he calls it, free won't, which is our power of veto. So the brain may make the decision, but then we can veto it. Pachauri's work in 2005 distinguishes several different forms of intention. She has a three-tier theory of intentions that distinguish between future-focused or distal intentions, and present directed proximal intentions and motor intentions. And her work has strongly informed my work, especially on the subject of intention forms. And I'll share that with you shortly. So the next slide is on entrepreneurs. And this is an area of great research. And in fact, this is probably the fastest growing area of research on intention. Large volume of research published on the subject. And this is just a tiny, tiny selection. The research centers around the role that intentions play in translating a business idea into an actual new business. Barbara Bird's research concluded that although entrepreneurial ideas begin with inspiration, intention, and attention, that although entrepreneurial ideas begin with inspiration, you action and attention to realize the ideas. Keller's work concluded that great intentional stability leads entrepreneurs to behave in a way that helps them to get the business started. But the biggest bit of research is the one at the bottom, Donaldson, 2019. And he gathered research data from 32,000 individuals. And he concluded that the pre-startup intentions play a really important role in new business ventures. Intentions, he concluded, drive actions that make things happen in the real world. And this helped me to shape the IAM framework that I'm going to share with you very, very shortly. So the next is on planned behavior. There's a lot of research on intentions and physical exercise, but also an area on what they've named as implementation intentions. So in 98, Odette and Wood concluded that future performance is heavily influenced by intentions. 2002, Milne and Sheeran ran a control trial, so really, really robust research, to see if intention setting could lead to actions, and in this case, getting people to exercise. And this is a fantastic paper, you know, do read it, it's a really good paper. The startling data that he came up with was he had three different groups with three different settings, but 91% of the group that set an intention actually did carry out the planned exercise. And this is in comparison to 35 to 38% of the other two control groups. So really, really interesting, a startling difference with the intention setting. And the researchers concluded that motivation had very little impact on behavior, but implementation intentions had a huge impact on the uptake of exercise. So, you know, motivation alone doesn't do it. It's the intention that's the active ingredient. And this research study led to many more exploring implementation intentions, and all of them concluded that implementation intentions play a big difference and a big role in making things happen. And this is been strengthened since I published the book. When I published Intention Matters, I was very much looking at core intentions in life, and actually these micro intentions, the implementation intentions, actually are very, very powerful, and they play a much bigger role than initially when I wrote the book I thought they did. So the next area of research is organizational strategic intent. And Timothy O'Shaughnessy's 2006 meta-analysis of all the research to date on strategic intent concluded that, in quotes, and I'm just going to quote from my notes here, strong performing companies state their intentions for the future and clearly communicate this to stakeholders. So another quote from the paper, strategic intent provides a useful source of inspiration that helps to guide internal and external stakeholders when making decisions, especially when the business environment is uncertain and there's ambiguity about the correct course of action. So some powerful stuff there around intentions. So to summarize the research, setting and communicating clear intention drives performance in organizations. Intention and attention are needed to realize those ideas. Intention drives actions that make things happen in the real world. And motivation alone has little impact on behavior, but intentions powerfully guide actions. So some really powerful research there. So that's the end of my first little section. And I wanted now just to give people the opportunity to ask any questions before we go on to the next couple of sections. Any questions there, Daniela? If there aren't, I will just plow on.
So far, there are no questions, but if you have a question, please write in the question and answer box or raise your hand now and we give you the microphone and you can ask your question. question pouring in. You can also vote on questions. So if you'd like a question to be answered, please vote. Gigi or Gigi is asking how you found any research on attention and career change.
There is some research. I'd have to find the citations to send you, but there certainly is in touch, especially around the implementation and the entrepreneurial side, because there's a lot in the entrepreneurial side on career change. So certainly around that area, I'd have to dig out the paper. I can't recollect the paper, but there is, I wouldn't say it's a robust evidence base, but there are a handful of papers on that subject. And certainly being clear on your intention, my experience working with people, you know, clarity of intention, once it can be a bit of a journey to get people to clarity of intention, but once they know it, they're off and they plow forward pretty fast. So, you know, if you need me to find some papers, let me know and I'll try to dig them out, but I'm not always brilliant at remembering the names, but they are there, yes. Any other questions?
There are three more, and I'm trying to look what, because you keep on going, so there might be, the questions might be answered in the following part of the presentation. How about the question from Rosie? She's asking, having intentions and motivation doesn't stop the road blockage of what you're trying to achieve. How can this be overcome?
I think the key thing is clarity of intention and belief. So if you have an intention, but you really don't think it's going to happen, you have limiting beliefs, that's going to get in the way. And as I described earlier, it's a scaling back till you get a balance between the two. But the other thing, which I can't emphasize strongly enough because it sounds counterintuitive, is holding that intention lightly. So when we get very rigid about how the intention will play out, like the man sitting on the roof, then we miss things that are in front of us, because sometimes things arise that will get us to our desired intention in strange and unexpected and sometimes circuitous ways. So it's about just being clear and having faith and being vigilant and then taking those opportunities when they arise. So sure, things will get in the way. And the case study that I've got with Helen, she certainly had a number of roadblocks, but her intention drove her through and helped her to find a way around it. So roadblocks will come, but if you have the intention, it will motivate you to find a way around it. As long as you're not too rigid and you're really open to that intention unfolding in whatever way is right for you.
Okay, should we have one more last question?
One more, and then we'll have to move on, I'm afraid, time-wise.
It's a short question. It's maybe not that short to answer. It's from Helen. How do we know what we want?
Well, there's the question. The simplest answer that I can give you, this is the embodiment conference, and we had the note from our sponsor. And it is about checking how it feels in the body. So we can have lofty intentions that actually end up, that they're actually somebody else's intention. So as an example, my mother trained to be a doctor and through a set of circumstances, didn't complete her training, regretted it, and she transferred that onto me. So all through my schooling, I thought I was going to be a doctor. And then it became clear to me that that wasn't my dream, that was my mother's dream. And so when you know that it's right for you, it feels right in the body. So often I say that mindfulness is a foundation for working with intention. And the mindfulness helps you to tune into what's going on in the body, whether something feels right or wrong. So if people haven't got a foundation of mindfulness or embodiment or somatics, then I teach them to be able to tap into the body. And over time, the ability to tap in and know that it feels right is the right thing. The important thing is not to get too logical about it. You can be logical and rational, but it has to feel right as well. And the world's best decision makers, they did research into the world's best decision makers. And the conclusion that they reached was they looked at all the logic, all the facts, all the figures. Then they checked in with their gut instinct. If it felt wrong, they didn't do it. So it is all about the embodiment side. And that's why I'm at the embodiment conference. So we'll move on and there'll be a chance for some more questions shortly. So we're moving now into models and frameworks. So the foundation of my work and intention really focuses on self-awareness and self-management, and mindfulness training, as I've just mentioned, really helps with this. It's about taking personal responsibility for your thoughts and actions, and it's designed to be simple, practical, and accessible. So what I've done in this book is I've tried to exclude some of the more metaphysical explanations of how intention works, because I don't think they're necessarily helpful. I've tried to keep it really practical, really grounded. And in fact, when I set out to write this book, I set out to write a really big weighty tome, and then I concluded that nobody was going to read it. So believe me, it's much harder to make a book this size than a big book. But that's the idea. I've tried to keep it really, really grounded. So this next part of the presentation is introducing you to some of the models that I find help people work more productively and help people to identify intentions too. So I wanted to start off with intention forms. Now, this is a new diagram of intention forms, and it's different to the one in the book. So I don't know if I can find the one in the book. Yes, there we go. In fact, I have a little yellow tag there. How useful. I didn't know that. But I don't know if I can get this to the camera, but you can see it's kind of a nested diagram. Now, the problem with that I've found is people think that you then have to have all of the intentions. So you have to have a micro intention and a nested intention and a core intention and a mega intention. And that isn't what I'm saying at all. You could just have a core intention. You could just have a micro intention. So you may have one or more intentions at any one time. You don't have to have the full set. It's not about having the full set. These are just distinctive, different forms of intention that I've tried to put some characteristics around to help people to work with them. So micro intentions are moment or day changing intentions, and they can be super, super powerful. In fact, since writing the book, I realized just how powerful they are. So they're most closely aligned in research terms to those implementation intentions that I mentioned. A nested intention supports the achievement of a core intention. So you may have a core intention and no nested intentions. The core intention may be perfectly clear enough in isolation, but for some people, there are little nested intentions that once achieved contribute to the core. So that's why we have nested intentions. Core intentions I define as potentially life-changing intentions, and often they're aligned to purpose. Now, I'm slightly hesitant in using that phrase because sometimes talking to people about what their life purpose is, people find incredibly difficult to define. So I've added aligned to purpose because they usually are, but you don't have to define your purpose to define your core intention. And then the last one is a mega intention. Now, only a tiny percentage of the world have mega intentions. They're potentially world-changing intentions. We don't have to be striving to have a mega intention. For many of us, core intentions where it's at, or even micro intentions. I've just added it in because some people do have these mega intentions. And so I just wanted to define there is this bigger intention. And as I say, I really can't emphasize strongly enough, these little micro intentions are so powerful. And if you remember Hank, who I introduced at the moment, the chap who lived off grid. Now, Hank, he had a strong core intention. He wants to live off grid. He wants to be as self-sufficient as possible. But he makes a lot of use of micro intentions. And one really good example of this, he tends not to get out too often by choice, you know, doesn't really want to mix with people. But he does do work for people he likes, and they're willing to put up with his somewhat idiosyncratic ways. So on this particular occasion, he was working for a lady called Mary Jane, fitting a new kitchen, and a trip to IKEA was planned. Mary Jane loathed IKEA and everything about IKEA. But from Hank's perspective, it was a day out. He was going to have as much fun as possible. And it started with getting in the car and observing what was going on in other cars, parking, getting in, going up the travelator. He maybe only went up an escalator or travelator once a year. So that was great fun, zooming up automatically. Mary Jane wants to stride up and just get there. He wants to stay. He wanted this whole experience of going up an escalator. She just wanted to get to the kitchen section. He insisted he had to have the IKEA cup of coffee. He then spent half an hour watching in the car park people try to put flat pack furniture into cars that didn't fit. And this went on through the entire journey. He had to look at every bit of design, how things were put together. He had to play with remote controls on the dimmer switches in the kitchens. he had to play in with all the light fittings and all the color combinations. And, you know, basically something that could have just been a chore turned into a really fun day out. They had a real laugh. They had a lot of fun. So sometimes just setting a little micro intention that the meeting that you're going to go into today, you're going to get your voice heard, or today you're going to really hear what's going on. Or, you know, dare I say it, shopping in face masks with coronavirus, you know, that you're going to notice one nice thing in the shop, or you're going to find one interesting product, or, you know, whatever it may be. Just setting that little tiny intention can make a huge difference to your day or your moment or a period of time. So we're going to play with some micro intentions in a moment. In fact, now, the Embodiment Conference. You know, micro intentions for this workshop might include, you know, it's my intention to pay attention to the presentation, discover how it could reshape my life, or any of these. But what I wanted you to do, and we haven't got long for this, but I'd just like you to set a micro intention for the rest of this session, and also for any other sessions that you're attending today. So I just want to pause just for a moment and just allow you to set a little micro intention. So there's never enough time. I'm hoping you've all had a moment, and if time allowed, I would have loved to have seen what you've set and discussed them, but we've got stuff to go through. So I just wanted you to have the opportunity just to see if it does have an impact on the rest of this session. So we've got another quick poll. So poll number two, if you could launch this, this is on the mind-brain connection, and it's which one of these statements is only true about the mind, so it doesn't apply to the brain at all. There we go. So we've got one person, some people are thinking about this. So this is only true about the mind, doesn't apply to the brain. Okay, so if we could start to close polling, please, now. And if you could leave it on the screen. Okay, so 49%, the top choice, is capable of mental time travel. And so what do we say? Do we say my brain has wandered, or do we say my mind has wandered? And is that is the correct answer. It is the only part capable of mental time travel. All of the rest actually apply to the brain, as we'll see. So I'll just remove that from the screen. Sometimes a little bit of a time delay. Here we go. So just like the debate earlier on free will, the mind-brain connection has been debated since Socrates' time. And in fact, I've been to whole weekend events just looking at this mind-brain connection. Here I am trying to cover this in about a minute. So there's probably going to be more questions than answers here, but hey, in for a penny, in for a pound, where angels fear to tread, that's me. Until fairly recently, there was something that we called the Newtonian model, mind-brain, and this had the idea that neuronal activity in the brain created the mind and this sense of consciousness. In 2001, there was research by von Lommel, and it was actually published in the medical journal, The Lancet, and it detailed 34 patients who survived cardiac arrest, and each of them spent a period of time with flat EEG, so no brain activity whatsoever. 12% had near-death experiences, and they watched and recalled events that happened when they were technically dead. So this has led to the argument that if consciousness and the mind is a product of brain activity, this couldn't possibly have happened. So the conclusion was that the theory that consciousness and memories are localized in the brain needs to be discussed. Dan Segal actually had a big meeting of neuroscientists and doctors, and the conclusion in 96 was the mind cannot be confined to what's inside our skull or even our body. So we don't have an answer here, but the model on the right is the more recent thinking, that the mind exists somewhere, not physically in the body, and there's two-way communication between the two, but the mind is separate from the brain. So I wanted to draw your attention, because this is something that we do use in Intention Matters. The mind isn't physical, it's capable of mental time travel. It interprets shapes and reality and through thoughts and feelings, and the mind tasks your brain. I like to think of the brain as your humble servant. It's trying to do its best for you all of the time, all day long. It's striving to be your humble servant. It's physical. It sits in this thing that we call a skull. Okay. It can only operate in the present moment. It receives commands from your mind, and it's activated or engaged by your mind. So a lot of the models that I work with are about how the mind tasks the brain. So we won't get too much into the debate about the two, but we know that they're separate, but exactly how they sit, we're not quite sure of. So a little bit on the neuroscience of intention. This is the model that I came up with, which I call the I am model. And we start off with this deep, sincere desire, a belief that it's possible, and allocate attention and activate will. And that all happens in the mind. The mind then tasks the brain to harness various cognitive processes that help you towards the intention, which leads to the body taking action, which leads to things happening in the real world. So it's worth just saying that we're only conscious of 5 to 10% of all of our cognitive activities. In fact, some people say it's only about 2%. It's much less than most people think. So I like to use the analogy that the conductor may be in charge of the orchestra, but the orchestra actually plays the music. And your life in reality is a reflection of your subconscious mind. And the subconscious is much more powerful than the conscious, and it can work for you or it can work against you. So setting an intention focuses on the power of the subconscious mind, and it gets that subconscious mind working, you know, in the right direction. I just wanted to give you a little warning about the danger of fuzzy intentions. And this is she doesn't mind me sharing this at all. It's a dear friend of mine. I won't mention her name. I nearly did. But she is single and she'd like to be in a settled relationship. And she's told me many times that she'd like a boyfriend like Keanu Reeves. And the trouble was that one day she contacted me and she said, "Hey, you'll never guess what? I've met this fella and he looks exactly like Keanu Reeves. Isn't that amazing?" Trouble was, she very rapidly found out that whilst he looked like Keanu Reeves, he wasn't a terribly pleasant individual. He had some fairly serious, rather unpleasant mental health issues and wasn't really boyfriend material. So this is what I call fuzzy intention. She wasn't clear enough about what she actually wanted as boyfriend material, but she set in this fuzzy intention that she wanted a boyfriend like Keanu Reeves. So that's exactly what she got. But then she discovered that it wasn't quite what she wanted. But we can all be guilty of this. And sometimes when we set an intention that isn't quite right, it helps us get into the direction of, you know, what is right. So that's the end of that section. And as time is a ticking, I'm going to take questions right at the end and just go through the next couple of models, if that's okay. So we haven't got much longer to wait through. I wanted to just talk about some applications of intention, because the more I'm working with it, the more I realize the applications. And of course, my work is mainly workplace focused. but mindfulness. You know, this is a big one. And all of the mindfulness teaching now, I place so much more emphasis on the intention side than I used to. It can make the difference between you really getting quite deep into your mindfulness activities and not so deep, and even just focusing for one session. So intention is hugely important for mindfulness. In coaching, I'm using it all of the time, sometimes covertly, sometimes overtly, but it's a great, great coaching tool. And I'll share a couple of models in a moment. Increasingly, but somewhat subtly, corporate strategy, mission and vision. As we can see, organizations are starting to use this, but there is a slow and gentle transition away from, you know, all of these vision statements towards intention. Not all organizations are calling that, but it's the intention part that's the active ingredient. Because let's face it, most mission and vision statements have no meaning to people and there's no particular belief, whereas the intention is a different matter. Career development, big part of, and career transitions. And this is an area of great interest to me. My master's degree is in training and performance management. So I've spent many years writing competency frameworks and performance management systems. And quite frankly, they fail to produce the results. They don't get people to be more engaged and perform better. Whereas intention and working with people's intention and aligning corporate intentions and purpose together with personal and individual purpose and intention is a really powerful way of getting people to pull in the right directions. And some of the most successful companies at the moment who are weathering the storms of COVID are all organizations that are purpose and intention driven. So it is starting to become an emerging thing, but it's early days. And often, of course, life transitions. I mentioned the difference between goals and intentions. And I'll put all of the slide up there. So again, looking at that same model, if you look at an intention, there's a deep sincere desire, there's belief, and so we get allocated attention, activated will, cognitive processes, actions and things happening. Whereas if you look at a goal, often there isn't a deep sincere desire. Sometimes it can be imposed on us. We haven't checked if we actually want it. So as a result, we may not have checked in with the belief system to see if it feels possible. And as a result, we may or we may not allocate attention and activate will. And as a result, we may or may not harness these cognitive processes. So you can see at a glance why intentions are much more powerful than goals. And I've also included a few details on this slide, which you can look at in slightly slower time. But I think that diagram, to be honest, pretty much says it all. So thinking about the work that I've been doing with corporate people. Most corporate people I work with are hugely wedded to goals. And if you say, hey, ditch goals, go for intentions, it's so hardwired into their head, it's really difficult. So I developed this model just to help people over a period of time to transition. And again, you can freeze frame when you look at this again and look at this in more detail. But the idea is that goals are primarily thinking, whereas intentions are knowing. And it's a staged progression over a period of time from thinking to feeling to knowing. So do watch this on the replay and just slow this down to have a little look at this model. So I am very aware of the time, Daniela, and there will be time for questions. I do have a case study, quite a detailed one, which I'm going to read out, which is about Helen, because I just want you to see a journey through this model and how there can be twists and turns. And although the model is linear, actually the journey can be anything but. I've just simplified the process just so that you can get the grips of it. So when I started in step one with Helen, her stated work-related goals were to enhance her communication skills, to be better at motivating her team, to support and manage change better, and to improve staff retention within her division. And I questioned why she really wanted to achieve this, and she gave me one of those looks, complete disbelief. And she told me they were really logical goals, and this is what she intended to achieve. And so I asked, why are they important? And she paused, and after some thought, she came back with, I want my company, especially my division, to be a really great place to work. I want to support and empower and develop my staff. And I want to be recognized as a great leader, gain promotion and access to new and important challenges. And so I tasked her to go away and to spend some time considering her core intent, you know, if there were no constraints at all. And several weeks later, we met up again, and she said that it had been a valuable exercise. What she came up with was to become the best leader she could be and to earn sufficient income to live comfortably in her house and do the things that she really loved. So when it all boiled down, that was actually what was important. And in step three, I got her to dilute, you know, to consolidate that even further. And she realized that, you know, her whole life was around her social life and her house. She loved entertaining. And so she wanted to stay in that house. And so she decided that paying off the mortgage as soon as possible was a priority. She reviewed her finances, but it also then prompted her to do something that she'd been dithering about. There was a director's vacancy, and she figured, if I can get that vacancy, then I can pay the mortgage off her off earlier. And once she'd done that, she applied for the director's role, she got it, and basically it set her off on a complete different trajectory. She brought in models, which meant that she started to work internationally, and 3 years later the mortgage was paid off. And her work in transforming employee motivation and organizational effectiveness via purpose-driven leadership gained her international recognition, and she had a fair amount of press coverage. So as interest grew in the approach, she started to help other organizations. And when she'd originally set her intentions, she thought it was all about working less, but now she realized she was doing what she loved. So she actually got what she wanted, but in a very unexpected way. Her mortgage was paid off, and she was now, the financial freedom meant that she could make the choices based on wants and needs. So if she'd have held that intention too rigidly, she wouldn't have got to that end result. So I just wanted to share that model with you. So again, freeze frame on this when you rewatch it, but I think that we're moving towards an intention, purpose, meaning and empowerment based organizational structure. We're at the moment starting to get towards feeling, and we're moving towards knowing, thinking having dominated for many years in the past. So in summary, intention, deep sincere desire, research base is young but growing, limitless applications. Remember that that brain is the humble servant, so give it some clear instructions and beware of fuzzy intentions. Remember that SMART goals are much less effective than clear intentions, and we need to do the shifting from thinking to knowing. So where will your intention take you? Any questions in the little tiny bit of time that we have available, if at all? There's never enough time. Do you know, I timed this out for 30 minutes of talking to allow plenty of time for discussion. Didn't matter, still only just got there.
It is a rich topic, and I really enjoyed it. I think we have time for one, maximum two questions. We have one person who is raising their hand, and we have two questions in the question and answer box. Where do you want to go?
Anywhere you like. If you read it out, I will answer it.
So I'm starting with a question from Sham, because he or she is already waiting for quite some time to get this answered. And Sham is writing, I meditate on an intention to heal my health issues every morning and night. I visualize myself being well and doing things I can't currently do. When I get very ill, this goes down the drain. Is there anything more I can do?
I think some change the record slightly. I think what you're doing is right. I haven't got time to discuss it in detail, but I've gone through some health issues recently, so I'm completely with where you're at. And I know, you know, if I get a flare up, then, you know, some of the good intentions I start to question. But I think it's changing that record. So first check the intention, check that there is the belief, and just start to, instead of just relying on the meditation, start to find other ways to do the same thing. So, for instance, if I go swimming, I use the motion of the swimming, the embodiment of the swimming, to set the messages, to watch, you know, inflammation disappearing from the body when I get inflammation in the body. So I think, you know, it's about getting clear on that intention, but also just checking that belief bit. So if there's a niggling bit of belief, but it's never going to happen, steer it back and dial it back to a point at which the DSD and the B match up, the belief matches up, and then test it again. And then once you're feeling really confident, you can always extend it and extend it a little bit. So shake it up a little bit. Keep doing what you're doing, but try some other things and be open to some other ways of doing it too. And you will get there. You know, the mind's the most powerful thing to fix the body. So just keep at it.
All right. There are more questions, but we are out of time. So, but people can find out more about you. I'm posting two links into the web, into the chat, if I find them, just a moment. And so one is Intention Matters, and the other one is Ahead for Work. Is there any other place, Juliet, where people can find you or find more about you?
Yeah, if you go to LinkedIn, I've got the link on this page there. LinkedIn, there's a bit about me. Instagram, less so. I'm a bit periodic there. But if you contact me, I didn't put it on there, but it's info, at aheadforwork.com. So aheadforwork.com. Just email me, and as time allows, I'll be happy to answer any questions, tell you more. That would be great.
And that is true. Juliet is really available and reachable, and I studied with her myself. So do reach out if you have more questions or if you'd like to work on intention or career. So that's her specialty. I will give a few final announcements, and then I will hand back the mic to you, Juliet, for a final top tip on being embodied, keeping your intention, something you can take a few moments to think about. And for all the others, so there was a lot in this conversation, and you might have noticed that you want to review things, that you want to go through the exercises again. And this is not just happening in this channel, this is happening parallel in 9 other channels. So if you can, do feel free to buy the recordings. This is not just for you to digest, it is also for us to help us to set this event up. This event is not free to set up. It is free to attend, but it's not free to set up. It costs about $1 million to make everything happen. And we're not yet at break-even point. So we really appreciate if you can to help us out and to upgrade your account. It's still 50% off until the end of the conference. So if you're considering, now is the time. Yeah. And of course, do go into the coffee breaks, meet other people. Connections are made by talking, and reflections are actually happening by discussing with others. So there are coffee breaks, there's a Facebook group. Do make use of those as well. Juliet, back to you. What do you want people to take with them from this session, from your work, to be embodied, to have an intention? In one sentence.
Be clear of your intention and hold it lightly.
That's an important one. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to have you here. I'm really happy that it worked out. I loved the session, and we will catch up. I'm finishing the session here officially, but I want to end with an invitation for you, if you'd like to be on the podcast from Mark, the Embodiment Podcast. Let's have email contact around this. If you're
indeed look forward, and thank you to all the well wishes that I've seen in the chat box. It's really been a huge pleasure. So thank you for all the well wishes. I'm glad you all enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely day, and see you soon.
See you soon. Bye-bye.